Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael reading the San Angelo Standard Times newspaper for the week of Sunday, May 22nd, 2022. I'll begin with local news articles. At the end of the program, we'll have Allison Watkins' horticultural columns. And if time permits, we'll read a few local sports articles as well. San Angelo City offices closed Monday for Memorial Day. No interruption in trash collection. By Rosanna Frere, published May 25th. Most San Angelo City offices will be closed Monday, May 30th, in observance of Memorial Day, according to a news release. There will be no interruption in garbage collection. The landfill will be closed Saturday, May 28th, but will be open Monday, May 30th. Lake Nasworthy Parks. Day passes to Middle Concho and Spring Creek Parks at Lake Nasworthy are available at their entry gates for $3 per vehicle for city residents and $6 per vehicle for non-residents. Camping permits cost $6 per campsite per night for city residents and $12 for non-residents. Permits can be bought at the entry gates and at Spring Creek Marina. Municipal Pool. The municipal pool will not be open Memorial Day weekend. It is delayed in its opening for the summer due to a filtration system issue. The system must be replaced, but it will take several weeks before it can be installed because of supply shortages. The system is being built now. We do not have a set opening date yet, but will provide updates as they are received, according to the release. Reservations will not be accepted until an official date is set for opening. We apologize for the inconvenience and look forward to seeing everyone when the pool is able to open. Fort Concho. At Fort Concho, Memorial Day exercises to honor the nation's military members who made the ultimate sacrifice in defending our nation will be at 9 a.m. Monday, May 30th, on the Fort Parade Ground in front of the site's headquarters building. Members of the Sons of the Confederate Veterans and the Fort Concho Living History Program will provide artillery salutes and memorial rifle volleys. Featured speakers will be Tom Green County Commissioner Rick Bacon, Mayor Brenda Gunter, and Pastor Joe Bourgeois, Air Force veteran and current pastor of Westside Baptist Church in San Angelo. Fort Concho will be open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Memorial Day for self-guided tours. For more information, call Fort Concho at 325-481-2646 or visit fortconcho.com. Women, infants, and children. The WIC offices will be closed, but those needing assistance may email WIC, W-I-C, at COSATX.US. City office closures. Among the city operations that will be closed May 30th, Animal Shelter, City Hall and the Community Development Building, City Hall Annex, Fairmont Cemetery's Business Offices, Municipal Court, Nature Center, Parks and Recreation Offices, San Angelo Tom Green County Health Department, Southside and Carl Ray Johnson Recreation Centers, Station 618 and Santa Fe Crossing Senior Centers, WIC Offices. City offices will reopen at 8 a.m. Tuesday, May 31st. Tom Green County primary runoff election results from staff reports published May 25th. Here are the unofficial final results from Tom Green County's primary runoff elections Tuesday, May 24th. County Judge, Republican Party. Lane Carter, 3,243 votes. 52.32%. Todd Coles, 2,955 votes, 47.68%. Justice of the Peace, Precinct 3, Republican Party, Stacy Speck, 898 votes, 59.83%. Ron Perry, 603 votes, 40.17%. County Commissioner, Precinct 4, Republican Party, Sean Nanny, 1,153 votes, 59.77%. Bill Ford, 776 votes, 40.23%. Tom Green County voting in statewide races. Lieutenant Governor, Democratic Party, Mike Collier, 373 votes, 51.88%. Michelle Beckley, 346 votes, 48.12%. Attorney General, Democratic Party, Rochelle Mercedes Garcia, 478 votes, 65.66%. Joe Jaworski, 250 votes, 34.34%. Comptroller of Public Accounts, Democratic Party, Janet T. Dudding, 448 votes, 62.66%. Angel Louise Vega, 267 votes, 37.34%. Commissioner of the General Land Office, Democratic Party, Sandra Grace Martinez, 391 votes, 54.08%. Jay Kleberg, 332 votes, 45.92%. Attorney General, Republican Party, Ken Paxton, 3,423 votes, 55.60%. George P. Bush, 2,734 votes, 44.40%. Commissioner of the General Land Office, Republican Party, Tim Westley, 2,361 votes, 42.62%. Don Buckingham, 3,179 votes, 57.38%. Railroad Commissioner, Republican Party, Wayne Christian, 3,708 votes, 66.80%. Sarah Stogner, 1,843 votes, 33.20%. Precinct Chair, Precinct 215, Republican Party, Beth Urich, 133 votes, 50.57%. Steve W. Hampton, 130 votes, 49.43%. Who won in the Tom Green County March primary election? County Court at Law Number 2, Andrew Graves, who gained 5,368 total votes for 50.56%, just ahead of Leland Lacey's 5,250 votes. County Clerk Christina Ubando, who earned 6,086 total votes for 63.53%. Lupe Gomez had 3,439 total votes. Justice of the Peace Precinct 1, incumbent Susan Werner, had 940 total votes for landslide 75.68%. Levi Vance had 302 total votes. Justice of the Peace Precinct 2, Tom Daniel took the lead with 1,871 total votes for 52.70%, pulling slightly ahead of Chris Durstein's total of 1,674. Democratic Party County Chairperson Mercedes De La Cruz won by a landslide with 1,177 total votes for 76.73%. Michael Lepak Sr. had 357 total votes. Unopposed winners: County Chairman Bruce Burkett, County Court at Law Number 1, Ben Nolan, District Clerk Anthony Monaco, County Treasurer Diana M. Speaker, County Commissioner Precinct 2, Sammy Farmer, Justice of the Peace Precinct 4, Eddie Howard. New dinosaur exhibits to be added to Angelo State University's Mayer Coliseum by Tom Nury, Angelo State University, published May 24th. Angelo State University's Mayer Museum is adding 7 new replica dinosaur skeletons to its collection, and they will be able for free public viewing starting Tuesday, June 7th. To accommodate the installation of the new exhibits, the museum will be closed from May 28th to June 6th. The dinosaur exhibits are a main attraction at the Mayer Museum, with the full-size Tyrannosaurus Rex skeleton as the centerpiece. The 7 new dinosaurs will bring the museum's total to 17 and will include Simoclicius napholica, predatory fish, Dimetrodon, giant self-finned lizard, Dromaeosaurus albertinus, feathered raptor, Anchotus petrosus, saber-toothed herring, Holmesina floridanus, giant armadillo, Megalonyx jeffersoni, giant sloth, and Bactrosaurus johnsononi, large four-legged herbivore. In addition to the Tyrannosaurus rex skeleton, the Mayer Museum's dinosaur collection includes numerous casts of dinosaur tracks and fossilized dinosaur eggs, as well as the other nine original dinosaur skeletons, including Bambiraptor feinbergi, small bird-like raptor, Simuria, amphibious lizard, Didelphaton vorax, carnivorous marsupial, Agajaractops, large multi-horned herbivore, Carcharocholis megalodon, giant shark jaws, Prenochilis myrtuna, spiky sea turtle, Styxosaurus, large marine reptile, Quetzalcoatlus northropi, giant flying mammal, New Hell Creek predosaur, small flying dinosaur. The Mayer Museum is open and free to the public from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. every Tuesday through Saturday. More details on current and upcoming exhibits and collections are available at angelo.edu/Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R, hyphen, museum. Allen's Transport completes purchase of facility in San Angelo, from staff reports, published May 24th. Allen's Transport Limited, based in Leduc, Alberta, Canada, has completed its purchase of the facility at 1182 Gas Plant Road in San Angelo, according to a news release from the San Angelo Chamber of Commerce. Allen's is one of the leading heavy haul and logistics companies in North America, with a fleet of trucks, custom trailers, and equipment combinations to safely and efficiently service petrochemical, mining, pulp and paper, industrial, refinery, and generator stations, the release stated. Allen's has committed to a multi-million dollar investment in San Angelo and seeks to continue their success in the lower 48 of the United States as a premier logistics and supply chain provider to multiple industries from their San Angelo facility, serving heavy industrial transportation needs throughout Texas, the Southwest U.S., and Central and Western Canada, according to the release. Allen's Transport has expanded into various other oil field-related services since its founding in 1991. They provide the equipment for both chemical and acid hauling, complete tank truck services, refined products, waste hauling, flat deck hauling, bed trucks, gravel hauling, hot shots, dust control, complete tank farm rentals, rail freight transloading, and rail cargo storage. Their new San Angelo terminal at Gas Plant Road is a 24,500-square-foot industrial facility on 10 acres and features seven high bays, repair and maintenance areas, equipment cleaning area, and operations offices. The property, built in 2014, will serve as Allen Transport's U.S. headquarters, with services provided throughout Texas, the United States, and Canada. Allen's Transport, acquiring the Gas Plant Road property, adds to our position as a city with strong ties as a trucking transportation hub, San Angelo Mayor Brenda Gunter said. It solidifies our city as well positioned to support the needs of the oil and gas industry. As mayor, I am proud to welcome Allen's Transport to Texas and the San Angelo business community. Allen's expects to hire approximately 20 full-time employees and has named Chad Brown as their San Angelo-based operations manager. For employment information, contact him at Chad, C-H-A-D-D, at Allen, A-L-L-E-N-S, transport.com or call 325-895-0298. San Angelo man becomes third, sent to prison in 2017 kidnapping and murder of Abilene father. By Elena Edgen, published May 23rd. One of five people charged in the brutal kidnapping, torture, and murder of an Abilene father near San Angelo has become the third man sent to prison in the case on Friday. On July 21, 2017, a series of events led Eric Torres, a 41-year-old Abilene business owner, to be lured to San Angelo under false pretenses to bid on a job. Over the next several hours, Torres was kidnapped and tortured in an attempt to find the location of his 4-year-old daughter. Torres was then killed and taken to a field south of Barnhart, where his body would not be found until August 4, 2017. On Friday, May 20th, David Navarro attended a plea hearing via Zoom in the 51st District Court. He was initially charged with capital murder by terroristic threat or other felony and aggravated kidnapping in connection to Torres's death. He also had a pending case for assault on a family household member with previous conviction, which is a third-degree felony. Navarro pleaded guilty to aggravated kidnapping and the assault. In exchange, state prosecutors suggested he be sentenced to 25 years in prison for the kidnapping and 2 years for the assault. He would also pay a fine of more than $8,600. 51st District Judge Carmen Dusek accepted the recommendation and sentenced him to those terms. Navarro became the second man in the case to be sent to prison last week, with Gary Jennings having been sentenced Monday. Torres's sister ended the hearing with the victim impact statement, as she had with the prior trials. "Eric mattered to my family, and you took that," she said. "Your blatant disregard and disrespect for human life, I hope you take this time to think about what you did and understand your actions have consequences." Cell phone data, texts, and videos build timeline around Eric Torres's death. Investigators reconstructed a timeline of Torres's death using cell phone data collected from mobile devices belonging to Jennings, Navarro, Torres, and Ray, as well as surveillance videos recorded from nearby businesses. Information revealed in Stephen's trial also added to the timeline. One woman, David Navarro's ex-girlfriend, told law enforcement Stephen mentioned wanting to harm Kristen's ex and scar him a year prior to the murder. She said Stephen Jennings wanted to kidnap Torres, beat him up, and leave him somewhere, according to testimony she provided in December. On July 20th, 2017, Stephen, posing as Daryl, contacted Torres to meet in Abilene about a possible construction job. When Torres arrived, Stephen said he couldn't meet. Stephen and Kristen then attempted to follow Torres home, but testimony revealed the attempt was unsuccessful. July 21st, 8:17 a.m. Kristen and Gary are in Abilene checking daycares. 8:28 a.m., Kristen texts Stephen, "We talked about the plan for 4 days. 9:48 a.m., Stephen texts Kristen, "Expletive it, let Eric come to the house." Kristen testified, "This changed the plan. She did not want Torres at their house." Before 11 a.m., Angela Ray said Stephen Jennings called her to ask her ex could back him up since Torres was coming. Later, he asks if she could watch Kristen's kids. 12:51 p.m., Navarro arrived at the Jennings' residence. 1:07 p.m., Eric's phone indicates he is in the area of Jennings' home. The last time his phone appears active is around 5:40 p.m. and had not moved. During this time, Navarro helps Stephen restrain and torture Eric in the residence. Navarro's phone places him in the area. Sometime in here, it is believed Gary helped in the torture and moved Eric's pickup down the road. 2:38 p.m., Stephen's phone searches for Pioneer Drive Baptist Church. 2:39 p.m., David Navarro is seen entering Stripes convenience store, 1606 La Follette, and leaving at 2:42 p.m. 2:48 p.m., Kristen and Stephen's phones appear in the Duckworth Road area. 4:45 p.m., Kristen enters Torres's home, assaults his mother, and takes his daughter. They start to head toward San Angelo. Within an hour, Stephen called Kristen and said Torres is dead, she testified. Around 6 p.m., a friend of Navarro saw a video he had taken during the torturing of Torres, which she later told law enforcement. The two met by the Walmart neighborhood market, 1852 Sherwood Way. 7:51 p.m., Home Depot video shows Stephen and Gary and a Chrysler 200 at the store, where they purchased heavy-duty duct tape, blue self-adhesive plastic film carpet protector, latex gloves, and bleach. Stephen was seen later that night in the same clothes at a Little Caesars. A phone belonging to Stephen was in the area of Duckworth Road for most of the day, while Dean and Gary's phones were shown traveling between Abilene and San Angelo. From the afternoon until the pre-dawn hours of July 22nd, Ray testified Kristen and her two children were at her house. Kristen had the four-year-old and her younger son. July 22nd, 2:24 a.m. Stephen and the Chrysler are seen on video at Stripes, 5655 Sherwood Way. Video shows Stephen gets gas while a passenger door appeared to open, indicating a passenger, officials said. 3:30 to 4:15 a.m., phone information shows Stephen on State Highway 163, south of Barnhart. This is the area where Torres's remains would be found on August 4th, 2017. 10:14 a.m., Gary and Stephen enter the Ballinger Stripes on Hutchins Avenue, according to video surveillance. Stephen's phone also shows him on this road through 10:23 a.m. 10:22 a.m., video from Jehovah Witness Church in Ballinger shows a gray pickup matching Torres's driving toward the Walmart, followed by a silver car. It was the first day law enforcement arrived at the residence in search of Eric Torres. No one answers. Investigators searched the Duckworth residence three times, July 25th, 27th, and August 11th, 2017. During those searches, Torres's hair and blood were found on walls and in part of a mop bucket. On August 4th, 2017, more information and interviews led officials to Torres's remains in a pasture south of Barnhart in Crockett County, 289 feet from a fence. What happens next for Kristen Dean and Angela Ray? Dean Navarro and Ray were offered plea bargains in exchange for testifying at Stephen's trial. Ray and Navarro also testified against Gary. Each received an immunity agreement in which the state would not pursue additional charges. Dean's plea bargain suggests 30 years for pleading guilty to a lesser murder charge and 20 years for aggravated kidnapping. Ray's offer recommended 10 years deferred adjudication for engaging in organized criminal activity. This is the type of probation that could help Ray avoid conviction if she adheres to conditions dictated by the state. The kidnapping charge could also be waived. Gary and Stephen Jennings sentenced in Eric Torres's death. On December 10, 2021, 340th District Judge Jay Weatherby sentenced Stephen Jennings to life in prison without parole for both capital murder and aggravated kidnapping, as well as 20 years for tampering, the maximum sentences that could be delivered after prosecutors waived the death penalty. On May 13, 2022, Gary Jennings was sentenced to 20 years each for murder, aggravated kidnapping, and tampering with evidence. This is the maximum sentence that could be given for tampering. Buckle Clothing Store taking over former Kirkland's building in San Angelo, by Rosanna Frere, published May 20th. The clothing store Buckle is moving from its location in Sunset Mall to the building previously occupied by Kirkland's. Buckle is scheduled to move into its new building at 4205 Sunset Drive, about two blocks away from the mall, by July 25th, according to a company representative. The site has been vacant since Kirkland's closed on January 26th, 2022. Buckle will continue to operate its store at Sunset Mall, 4001 Sunset Drive, until the move is complete. Buckle operates about 450 stores in 42 states, according to the company's website. Big Lake man charged with capital murder and death of wife and daughter. From staff reports, published May 19th. An 80-year-old Big Lake man was arrested Wednesday, May 18th, and charged with two counts of capital murder, according to a report by the Big Lake Wildcat. The Reagan County Sheriff's Department received a 911 call at 3:57 p.m. Wednesday from a man claiming he had hurt his wife and daughter, according to the report. When deputies arrived at the residence, they found two deceased individuals inside the home. Both victims were adult females, according to the report. Porfirio Ortiz, 80, was taken into custody at the scene, the report stated. The capital murder charges carry a mandatory life sentence without parole if convicted. San Angelo to temporarily change method of disinfecting public water supply. By City of San Angelo, published May 18th. The City of San Angelo's Water Utilities Department will change how it disinfects the public water supply from June 1st to June 30th, according to a city news release. The water department normally uses a chloramine, a mix of ammonia and chlorine, to disinfect water. In June, the water department will only use chlorine, also known as free chlorine. The yearly temporary conversion from chloramines to free chlorine, a common practice for municipal water systems, ensures water safety in pipelines by ridding mains of residual microscopic organic particles. That yields the highest quality of drinking water. Citizens may see more flushing of fire hydrants in June. Water lines with low flow must be flushed more often to keep free chlorinated water moving through the system. Free chlorine is a stronger disinfectant than chloramine. Water users may note a slight change in the smell, taste, and look of their water. This may include a chlorine odor and slight discoloration. Most symptoms should lessen after a couple of weeks. They do not affect the safety of water. The water department encourages kidney dialysis patients to talk with their equipment supplier. Different equipment may have varying needs and require adjustments. The city has contacted local hospitals to alert them of the change. Some reverse osmosis systems are not designed to work with water that has free chlorine. Owners of RO systems should check their operation manuals or system manufacturers to ensure they will not be adversely affected by the change. The process most fish tanks have for removing chloramines from water should do the same with free chlorine and need no adjustments. Fish tank operators should confirm that their equipment supplier. Pet stores have also been told of the conversion. The water department will monitor chlorine levels and water quality standards in the distribution system on a daily basis to ensure all regulatory standards are met. Frequently asked questions. Why is our water system making these changes to our disinfection process? Our water system normally uses ammonia and chlorine as the main means to disinfect water. Mixing these two chemicals forms chloramine, the most common disinfectant used in the United States for water systems that use lakes and rivers as their source. Occasionally, these systems must return to free chlorine as their disinfectant for a brief time to properly maintain the distribution system. Free chlorine works better than chloramine to control thin biofilms of organics and microbes that can build up in pipelines over time. This is common preventative maintenance used by most water systems that use chloramine as their main disinfectant. When will this start and how long will it last? The conversion will start June 1st and last approximately 4 weeks. Will I need to do anything differently during this change? No action is necessary. You may drink and use your water normally. What changes to the water will I notice during this period? Initially, you may notice more of a chlorine taste and smell to your water, especially in showers and sinks. Water also may be slightly discolored in areas with low flows and water mains. These symptoms should lessen after a couple of weeks, but may be present, though less noticeable, during the 4-week span. I have a fish tank. How will it affect my fish? We recommend that you check with your equipment supplier. The process you have in place to remove chloramines in the water should also remove free chlorine. No change or adjustment should be needed. I've heard this can affect kidney dialysis machines. Is this true? We recommend you check with your equipment supplier. Different equipment may have different needs or adjustments. Will the city do anything to lessen the taste and odors we might experience during this change? Yes, the city will implement procedures to reduce effects as much as possible. However, changes will likely occur and may persist. We will monitor free chlorine levels throughout the system each day to ensure they are at correct levels. You may also see more flushing of fire hydrants. Water lines with low flow must be flushed more often to keep free chlorinated water moving through the system. The Water Utilities Department does not like doing this during drought restrictions, but in some areas it will be required. Whom can I contact with additional questions or concerns? Call the Water Utilities Department at 325-657-4300 for more information. San Angelo woman charged with multiple fraud and theft charges, previously convicted. By Elena Edgen, published May 17th. A San Angelo woman is facing multiple enhanced felony charges involving fraud and theft, according to court documents obtained Monday, May 17th. Amy Michelle Tidwell, 50, also known as Murray Dickerson, Fielder, Harrington, and Jenkins, was arrested Friday on suspicion of multiple charges and warrants. The charges, which were indicted in April, are 3 counts of theft of property less than $2,500 with 2 or more prior convictions, enhanced to a second-degree felony. 1 count theft of property between $30,000 and $150,000, enhanced to a habitual offender status. 4 counts fraud, use, possession of identifying info less than 5 items, enhanced to a second-degree felony. 1 count fraud, use, possession of credit or debit cards less than 5, enhanced to a second-degree felony. Throughout the 5 cases, the indictment stated Tidwell had one person's debit credit card information and took an unspecified amount of property over $30,000 from them. Possessed or used another person's driver's license number, name, and date of birth. Possessed or used a company's credit card by having the number and expiration date. Stole a television or wall mount. Had another person's credit debit card number and the card verification value or card holder's name. Stole knives from a company. Possessed a company's bank account number and took its money. These charges have been enhanced due to prior convictions. In 2012, she was convicted for a false statement to obtain credit in Travis County. She was also convicted for failure to appear and theft in Tom Green County in 2002. Tidwell had another theft by check conviction in Ector County in 1996. Tidwell remained in Tom Green County Detention Center with no bond listed as of 1 p.m. Tuesday, according to online jail records. Tidwell has prior felony card abuse and theft charges dating back to 2001. Some had been pending in court before the April indictments. A court date on the April cases is set for mid-June, according to online court records. Low-risk registered sex offender arrested after San Angelo child makes outcry of abuse. By Elena Edgen, published May 17th. A San Angelo man, previously convicted for indecency with a child in 1995, has been arrested in connection to a recent child sex abuse case, according to court documents obtained Monday, May 16th. A child, 11, made an outcry of sexual abuse and named a San Angelo man. The child stated the man had inappropriately touched them multiple times between January 5th, 2020 through November 29th, 2020 in San Angelo, according to the arrest affidavit. During an interview with investigators, the man admitted to what the child reported. Record state. Deputies arrested Raymundo Luna, 61, on suspicion of continuous child sex abuse of a child younger than 14 years old. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center with no bond listed as of 4:45 p.m. Monday, according to online jail records. Luna previously pleaded guilty to four counts of indecency with a 9-year-old child in Tom Green County in 1995, for which he received 10 years deferred adjudication, a type of probation that could have helped him avoid conviction if he followed the rules of the agreement. That probation was revoked in 2005 due to unsupervised meetings with a child younger than 17, being within 1,000 feet of a place children congregated, and not going to counseling. He was then sentenced to 4 years in prison. The Texas Public Sex Offender Registry listed Luna as low risk. This means he posed a low threat to the community in terms of engaging in further criminal sexual conduct, according to neildavislaw.com. Angelo State University student arrested after woman reports multiple assaults, by Elena Edgen, published May 13th. An Angelo State University student is facing felony charges after a woman reported multiple assaults, which made her fear for her life, according to arrest affidavits obtained Thursday, May 12th. The affidavits detailed two separate assaults. On September 6th, 2021, a man forced a woman into his dorm room at ASU and violently assaulted her, according to the woman's report. She told ASU police he threw her to the bed, where he bit, scratched, slapped, and choked her, record state. The choking rendered her unable to speak. She believed she was going to die, according to an arrest affidavit. The woman provided photos of her injuries, which were not detailed. Between August and November 2021, the woman reported he had choked her 8 to 10 times. Two of those times, she lost consciousness and believed she would die, record state. During the choking assaults, her lungs and chest hurt. She would dry heave, become dizzy, and have headaches, according to the arrest affidavit. Timothy Colon Ball, 19, of Beaumont, was arrested Wednesday on suspicion of aggravated assault causing serious bodily injury and aggravated sexual assault. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $50,000 bond as of 1:45 p.m. Thursday, according to online jail records. The sexual assault is a first-degree felony, punishable by 5 to 99 years in prison and a fine not to exceed $10,000. The injury charge is a second-degree felony, punishable by up to 20 years in prison. San Angelo man charged after person seriously injured in machete attack, by Elena Edgen, published May 13th. A San Angelo man could spend decades in prison after a Tom Green County grand jury charged him with aggravated assault 2 months after indicting him for assaulting a pregnant woman, according to court documents released Tuesday, May 10th. Around March 19th, police arrived to a reported assault on Hughes Street. They found a person seriously injured with large cuts and gashes to his head and neck, record state. The injured man was taken to Shannon Medical Center's ICU. A witness told investigators a man attacked the person in the living room with a machete, according to the arrest affidavit. Police met with the man, who stated he was trying to kill the person during the attack, according to the affidavit. John Joshua Padilla, 23, was arrested on March 19th on suspicion of aggravated assault causing serious bodily injury. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $50,000 bond as of 3:05 p.m. Thursday, May 12th, according to online jail records. An indictment filed in April charged Padilla with aggravated assault of a household member with a weapon. This is a first-degree felony, punishable by 5 to 99 years in prison and a fine not to exceed $10,000. A court date has been tentatively scheduled for July, according to online court records. Padilla was also indicted with assault on a pregnant woman in February. A court date in this case is set for late May, according to online court records. San Angelo man charged with physically assaulting child, 7, after Nerf gunfight. By Elena Edgen, published May 13th. A Tom Green County grand jury charged a San Angelo man months after a 7-year-old was reportedly choked, scratched, and bruised, according to court documents released Tuesday, May 10th. On December 23rd, 2021, police arrived at a residence on Main Street for an unknown problem. An officer noticed a man attempting to leave and detained him after learning of a reported assault, records state. Interviews with witnesses revealed several adults, including one man, had been visiting and drinking alcohol. At one point, a child, 7, and a man played with Nerf guns. One woman told officers the man took the playing too far, and it escalated to him pushing the child onto the couch, getting on top of them, and choking them with his hands, according to a police report. When the man, who reportedly weighed about 250 pounds, got off of the child went to the bathroom and threw up. The man told a woman the child was throwing up, and when she went to the child, they described the assault, records state. An officer noted the child had a bruise and scratch on their neck and another scratch on their upper chest. The officer spoke to the child, who stated this hurt them so bad they went to the bathroom to throw up, according to court documents. Ronald David Ramirez, 38, was arrested December 23, 2021, on suspicion of injury to a child with intentional bodily injury. He was released on a $15,000 bond on December 25th, according to online jail records. An indictment filed in April charged him with injury to a child with intentional bodily injury. This is a third-degree felony punishable by up to 10 years in prison and a fine not to exceed $10,000. A court date has been tentatively scheduled for late May, according to online court records. Ballinger woman charged after search reveals hundreds of IDs, social security cards, and more. By Elena Edgen, published May 12th. A Ballinger woman is facing a minimum of 15 years in prison after a search of a Tom Green County property revealed about 650 documents containing personal information of nearly 100 people. The documents included social security cards, driver's licenses, credit cards, banking information, and other legal documents, according to court records released Wednesday, May 11th. In an arrest affidavit, law enforcement detailed a search at a residence in Tom Green County owned by the Ballinger woman on December 27th, 2020. The search revealed approximately 650 documents from about 98 people. The information included personal identifying information, account numbers, routing numbers, checkbooks, legal documents, mail and property documents. The owners of the information, which included a company, told investigators the woman did not have their permission to have these items, records state. Macy Leanne Watson, 29, was arrested in April 2021 on suspicion of fraud, use, possession of more than 60 items of identifying information, unlawful use of a criminal instrument, and several warrants. Watson was arrested again April 28, 2022, on suspicion of burglary of a habitation. Watson remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $15,000 bond as of 7:38 a.m. Wednesday, according to jail records. Two indictments filed in April 2022 charged Watson with fraud, use, possession of more than 60 items of identifying information, and possession of 5 to 10 items of identifying information. Both charges have been enhanced, with the 60-item charge becoming a first-degree felony punishable by 15 to 99 years. The second charge moved up to a second-degree felony, which has a maximum prison sentence of 20 years and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Part of the enhancement is due to Watson's prior conviction for possession of methamphetamine in March 2016. And now turning to a few local sports articles. Angelo State baseball team hosts Colorado Mesa for Super Regional by Charles Bryce, published May 24th. The number 6-ranked Angelo State University baseball team will host the 10th-ranked Colorado Mesa in a best-of-three games NCAA D2 Super Regional on Friday and Saturday at Foster Field at First Community Credit Union Stadium. The winner will advance to the D2 College World Series in Cary, North Carolina on June 4th through 11th. The Rams are trying to make it back for the second straight year and the fourth time overall under longtime head coach Kevin Brooks. Game 1 is scheduled for 7 p.m. Friday, followed by Game 2 at 3 p.m. Saturday. Game 3, if necessary, will follow at approximately 7 p.m. ASU improved to a 48-11 after eliminating Lone Star Conference foe Texas A&M Kingsville in three games at home this past weekend in the Rams section of the South Central Regional. The Rams are the top seed in the region. Colorado Mesa, 42-15, the number 2 regional seed, won 2 of 3 games against St. Edwards to wrap up its section of the South Central. The Rams and Mavericks have met 6 times, with both teams winning 3 games. In the last meeting, ASU held on for a 5-2 victory at home against the then number 1 ranked Mavericks in the South Central Regional last year. ASU has won 21 of its last 22 games. The Rams pushed their winning streak to 20 games before Kingsville won Game 2 of the Regional 12-11. Offense sputters, defense shines at San Angelo Central's spring football game by Charles Bryce, published May 18th. Playing in 107-degree heat, San Angelo Central High School's defense got the upper hand in the Bobcats' annual spring football game Wednesday night at San Angelo Stadium. Not that the final score really matters in an intra-squad scrimmage, but the Bobcats D won 56-31 for those who are counting at home. The Bobcats are always looking to add a new twist to the scrimmage format. "We stole the point system from USC," Central head coach Kevin Crane said. "We saw their spring game on TV and we just kind of copied it. Defense started with 21 points, and then they had the ability to score based on fourth down stops, missed fields goals, and they got extra points for a safety, which they got. That was 7 points instead of 2. The defensive touchdown that they got was 7 points. They had some opportunities to add on to what they had, whereas in the past, we'd just give them 28 points to start and we'd try to catch them. They didn't have a chance to score more, but tonight they did." Crane said the defense played well as a unit, the D-line in particular. "They rushed the passer," he said. "I feel like we're going to be a little quicker up front this year, so they did some good things. Obviously, Jacoby Yates with the pick 6 was a big play. I think Darius Floyd probably did some good things at linebacker. To be sure, I'd have to look at the film, but just kind of eyeballing it, I saw those guys do some good things." Offensively, backup quarterback Ben Emler got all the snaps with the starters in place of fellow senior Tyler Hill, an All-West Texas QB last season. Crane didn't go into specifics why the Bobcats starting QB was not in the lineup, only to say he'll be back. The Bobcats didn't get into a good rhythm offensively, but Crane still thought Central did some good things on that side of the ball as well. "We just weren't consistent enough," Crane said. "We had dropped balls, penalties, and holdings, and some of that stuff set us back. We'll watch it on film and learn from it and hopefully get better from here." Crane has confidence in his backup QB, who had an up-and-down performance Wednesday. "I thought he did some good things this spring," the Bobcats coach said. "He certainly got better. The win tonight was tough. When we have win like this, it makes it tougher to throw the ball and do some different things. Tonight probably wasn't his best night, and he'd probably tell you that too. But he did some good things as well, and that's a work in progress. I'm proud of Ben. I thought he stepped up and rose to the occasion. He's just got to get better from here." Crane said the extreme heat played a part in the Bobcats looking sloppy and a little out of sync at times. "We've got to learn to play through that," the Bobcats coach said. "It's a little bit different because we practice every day in the morning, so we're used to the cooler weather. We knew it was going to be hot, but we did rotate a bunch in and out and tried to keep them as fresh as we could." "That's part of it in Texas. I thought they handled that part of it really well. We didn't have much cramping. A lot of time when it's hot, you worry about cramping and different things. We didn't have much of that at all tonight. There was a good crowd on hand despite the extreme heat." "We love to play in front of our fans," Crane said. "It says a lot about our support and our program when you have that many people show up to a spring game. It's always fun for the kids, and it's fun for the coaches to have that kind of a turnout. We're thankful for the people who showed up tonight, and we appreciate them being here." Central finished 4-7 overall and 2-4 in District 2-6A in Crane's first season as head coach last year. The Bobcats lost in the first round of the playoffs. The Bobcats are hungry to give their fans more to cheer about in 2022. "We've had a good off season and we've had a good spring," Crane said. "They're a close team, which is a good thing. They like to hang out and they like to do things together outside of this building. I've told them teams that we've had like that in the past have been really good teams for us, and so I think that's important. The culture of this team is really good right now. The next phase for us is summer. We've got to have a great summer, and then the fall will be here before we know it." And now here's a column from Allison Watkins. Tips for helping your landscape survive the long summer ahead. Published May 12th. Summer came all too soon, and the combination of heat with very little rainfall is stressful to landscapes and gardens. Plants need a period in the spring with rainfall and cooler weather to put on lots of new growth for the growing season, and they didn't get that this year. Focus on good plant selection. Plant things that are tough and can handle the heat and drought. And efficient irrigation. Make the most of what water is applied instead of allowing it to evaporate, to help plants make it through the long summer. If planting anything new, try to use larger transplants. They will have bigger root systems and can handle the stress of being planted in the heat better than small transplants. Some beautiful plants that thrive in the heat include sweet potato vine, pride of Barbados, yellow bells, lantana, gopher plant, and various salvia varieties, including Mystic Spire's blue salvia, a favorite of many horticulturalists and master gardeners. Vegetables to plant now include okra, pumpkin, squash, cantaloupe, and southern pea. To make irrigation water go further and reduce evaporation, use drip irrigation in beds. Drip tubing, used correctly, is healthier for plants and conserves water. Replenish mulch in beds to a depth of 3 to 4 inches to further prevent evaporation, keep roots cooler, and reduce weeds. Drip irrigation and mulch are an incredible combo for beautiful beds with healthy plants that can survive the heat of summer. For lawns that use sprinkler heads, convert to more efficient multi-stream nozzles and don't water during the hot part of the day. Water deeply but infrequently. Throughout the year, go as long as possible between watering sessions to help promote deep root growth. Watering too frequently encourages shallow rooting, and when the heat of summer hits, shallow-rooted plants may not be able to stay hydrated no matter how much irrigation is given. Save the date, June 16th at 6 p.m. for a seminar on landscape water conservation, featuring info on drought survival, irrigation efficiency, and rainwater harvesting. More details to come. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu. And here's another column by Allison Watkins. Advice for keeping your trees and plants alive in extreme drought conditions. Published May 18th. The heat is not relenting, and we are in extreme drought conditions throughout the Concho Valley. Careful, efficient irrigation will be required to keep landscape plants alive without wasting water that is needed for drinking and household use. First, evaluate tree water needs. Trees are the most permanent, valuable part of a home landscape, and many landscape trees will need supplemental irrigation since we have had no significant rainfall this spring. Most shade trees planted in West Texas are drought tolerant and can get by on rainfall during normal years if well established. But extra watering is recommended this year, even for mature oaks and other tough trees. Pecan trees in particular will need thorough irrigation every 2 to 3 weeks to stay healthy. To water large trees, don't place the water hose near the trunk, but aim the irrigation toward the drip line, the edge of the tree canopy, where there are more water-absorbing roots. Normally, mid to late May is the time of year we recommend spraying pecan trees for pecan nut case bearers, a moth pest that damages developing nuts in their early stages of growth. But this year, we are recommending no sprays in most cases. Allow the case bearers to help thin the crop, reducing stress on the trees. Any newly planted trees, shrubs, or perennials should be watered by hand for the first few months. Drip or sprinkler irrigation is not enough to get new plants going, especially in extreme heat and drought. If any travel or time away from home is planned, set up a drip system on a timer for potted plants or ask a neighbor to water them. Plants in containers dry out faster and require more frequent attention. Turf grass should be watered 1 inch once per week if well established. Newly planted seed or sod will need to be irrigated lightly every day or several times per week until strong roots are developed. Every sprinkler system is different. To know how long to run a particular system, do a catch can test. Set out clean, empty tuna cans or similar containers and run the zone until an inch of water is measured in most cans. If runoff occurs before an inch can be applied, use the cycle and soak method. Stop the system for a period and allow the water to soak in, then run again to reach the desired inch of water. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.